It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show on this Wednesday. It's the 29th of May, believe it or not, and it's just turned 4 minutes past nine. And you're very welcome along for the next 3 hours. The first hour of the show, traditional format, and then we have our third from last local election debate coming up between 10 and 12. They've proved really popular with you, the listeners, so far. So hopefully today's will be another interesting one. Our focus is on Glenties. We've already done one on Glenties. There are 16 candidates for 6 seats, so we had to split it into two. And our guests this morning, Dennis McGee, 100% Redress, Brian Carr of Sinn Féin, Anthony Matthew Doohan, an independent, Michael Harkin of Aintu, Anne-Marie Rogers of Fianna Fáil, and John Seamus O'Ferry of Sinn Féin. They'll all be in studio with us. Also invited today was Jonathan Stewart, an independent, Anthony Molloy of Fianna Fáil, both either unavailable or declined. One is the same as the other, I suppose. So still, a very interesting panel. So if you are in the Glenties electoral area and you have any questions which you wish to us wish us to put to our guests, then get in touch with us right now. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. We've also been banging out record viewers figures across our socials and on our website as well. So if you want to watch it, and nothing beats watching it sometimes as well, a debate like that, well, then you can go onto our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. We're live on it now, but we'll be switching to a second stream for the debates. And also, you can watch on our website, highlandradio.com. There's a watch live ticker there, and we're on Facebook as well. Right, let's have a look at the newspapers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice, €91,000 plus raised at Relay for Life 2024. With over 91,000 raised so far, the weekend's Relay for Life 2024 at ATU campus has been hailed a massive success. This year marked the 10th anniversary of the event that had 38 teams taking part this year. Relay for Life chair Seamus Devine said, "We had 38 teams taking part this year, up from 29 last year, and the weather went according to plan, and everything else went according to plan as well." Okay, good news there. On to the Nationals, and a story we've been carrying on the news bulletins this morning. The Irish Times reports it. Regulators have opened up an investigation into two health service executive data breaches after videos posted online showed people accessing medical records which were supposed to be in secure hospital storage. The inquiry by the Data Protection Commission comes after the HSE notified it of instances last year at a Dublin hospital and at a building in the old St. Connell's Psychiatric Hospital in Letterkenny, County Donegal. You might remember that we were the first to reveal that this a person from Northern Ireland had gained access to St. Connell's. He said he effectively walked in through an open door and he was able to walk around the building, and there were boxes upon boxes upon boxes of medical files. And some of them actually relate to some consultants that were listed on those files still operating in the Northwest. So it can't have been as old as some would have had you believe. Then after that, the HSE had nothing left to say. And we were curious as to how we could hold the HSE to account if they were refusing to comment on it. The person responsible claimed he effectively did a public service. He was on the show as well. He said that, look, anyone could have gone in. I went in, I videoed, I didn't show any personal information as such. And people deserve to know that these files were so easily accessible if anyone wanted to go in there and take them for dodgy reasons. But anyway, I wonder what's happened since. We'll talk about that a little later on in this hour. The Dublin incident, I'm not terribly interested in that. Just fast forwarding to the HSE incident. Not the HSE incident, but the Letterkenny incident. They're going on to the TikTok there. The inquiry by the Data Protection Commission comes after the HSE notified it of instances last year at the Dublin hospital, as I mentioned, and in Letterkenny. The Dublin incident in October was live streamed online, it's understood. In the Letterkenny incident in November, a TikToker, a video showed people going through boxes of historic medical files. And the Data Protection Commission has teeth. It'll be interesting to see what it does there. On to the Irish Independent now. And scientists have developed and tested a new non-hormonal male contraceptive, which they believe could lead to a reversible birth control pill for men. While there are many forms of female contraception in clinical use, birth control options for men are currently very limited. Although researchers have been investigating several strategies to develop male contraceptives, we still do not have a birth control pill for men, study co-author Martin Matzuk said. The study in the journal Science showed that a novel non-hormonal approach targeted sperm offers a promising method of reversible human male contraception. And if it was a daily pill, I wonder, would fellas be as inclined to take it? And would women be confident that they would? I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Irish Daily Mail this morning. Asylum seekers who wrongly received payments from the state will not have to return the money due to serious lapses in controls by the Department of Social Protection. The department has confirmed it will not seek to recoup extra monies paid to asylum seekers as means tested. Testing will only begin next month. A damning audit by the Controller and Auditor General found serious lapses in controls of these payments, while the Social Protection Minister was warned that failing to act on legislation passed in 2018 was costing the state close to $11 million annually in overpayments. The audit by the state spending watchdog and obtained by the Daily Mail reveals that in mid-2022, weekly payments weekly payments to asylum seekers were made electronically directly into applicants' bank accounts rather than being collected in post offices. Another control measure that meant asylum seekers were only eligible to claim for an allowance if they were living in a designated centre was dropped by the department at a time when the number of asylum seekers arriving into Ireland soared, but they're unable to recoup it because of the data control. Disturbing scenes in the capital yesterday. The Irish Daily Star and others report on them. A man caught yesterday brandishing a knife on the same Dublin street where a mass stabbing occurred last November was recently detained over mental health concerns. The Star has established that an Irishman from Dublin, the Dublin One area, was detained after he was seen allegedly banging on a school bus and brandishing a knife on Parnell Square at around 9 a.m. on Monday morning. Now, I do understand why they believe they are identifying the nationality of this person, because he's the idea probably being not to stir up any anger or what have you, but there is a bit of a double standard here, because then if other groups of individuals identify the nationality of an individual and he's non-Irish, then people say, well, you shouldn't do that, should you? It's wrong and it's fear-mongering, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, there is a something of a double standard there. But I can understand perhaps why his nationality has been revealed. The shocking incident happened in the same area where a mass stabbing incident that left a young child in a critical condition last November sparked widespread riots in Dublin city centre. Locals yesterday said a man was threatening and abusing those on the bus, including a young child who was attacked in the violent incident that saw another child get critically injured. So that's the part of the story that jumps out at me. A young child that was the subject of the attack last year actually witnessed this, and no child should go through that once, let alone twice. On to the Sun this morning, and a top TJ or DJ has accused Fine Gael of not having the backbone or bottle to push ahead with laws that will let nightclubs open up until 6 p.m. And publican associations fear it's the last call for dramatic changes to our licensing laws and worry they'll be axed if not passed in the coming months. 2 years ago, the Cabinet signed off on a draft of the Sale of Alcohol Bill that would let pubs stay open until 12:30 a.m. 7 nights a week. It also allows late bars to open until 2:30 a.m. while nightclubs can serve alcohol until 5 a.m. and stay open until 6 a.m. But despite repeated vows from Justice Minister Helen McEntee, Arts Minister Catherine Martin and former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, the laws have not been passed. Now, this is one of those laws that I haven't encountered anyone who was in favour of it. Either those who might be inclined to go out to that time. I never heard anything from a young person that says, I would love to be able to stay out till 5 or 6 in the morning. Or even parents, and I mean parents of adult children, who can be nervous enough waiting for the child to come home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, let alone in the early hours, or actually it's not really the early hours, 6 or 7 o'clock the following morning. It looks like they're being shelved. They've caught some in the papers that are interested in those laws going ahead. As I say, I've yet to encounter anyone, or in fact, get a text on this show or a message on this show from anyone who is in favour of nightclubs staying open until 6. But maybe you're out there. Let us know if you want those laws brought in. They may be put on the shelf forever now. And finally, the Irish Daily Mirror. Ireland officially recognised Palestine as a state yesterday as its flag flew over Leinster House as the government signed off on the move. Taoiseach Simon Harris called for all levers to stop the violence before Netanyahu's next tragic mistake. Although the statehood decision was announced by Mr. Harris, Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Green Party leader Eamon Ryan last Wednesday, it had to be formally approved by Cabinet ahead of statements in the Dáil groups gathered outside Leinster House saying, thank you, Ireland. And we're probably going to see an awful lot of people when they can safely get out of Gaza coming to Ireland now, because it would be seen as a country that is and has traditionally been a country that is sympathetic with their plight, and the expectation is that this could be a safe place for them to travel to. Ahead of statements in the Dáil, groups gathered outside Leinster House saying thank you, Ireland. Proceedings were halted temporarily as protesters in the Chamber's public gallery called for sanctions on Israel, which is kind of interesting because presumably they were invited in. You can't just go in, as far as I'm aware, unless it's changed. You can't just go into the public gallery without an invite. So someone invited them in, and then proceedings were halted as they called for sanctions on Israel. Mr. Harris raised concerns about the deaths of dozens more civilians in Gaza being labelled tragic mistakes by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Victims included dozens of people, some of whom were children, killed at a camp for displaced people in Rafah on Sunday night. This came after Hamas rockets being aimed at Israel. Now, I was talking about this off air to people. I wouldn't be fit to watch those videos. I just don't, it just wouldn't be my thing whatsoever. But maybe we should see them so we fully understand the extent of what's going on. Business Matters, by the way, on Business Matters on Sunday, June 2nd, Chris Ashmore will be looking at how Microfinance Ireland can help businesses as he speaks with Philip O'Kennedy of the Donegal Local Enterprise Office. He also chats with Food Coast Donegal advisor Maura Toner about some of the great Food Coast Donegal events in the months ahead. And he hears from Maria Doherty of the Donegal ETB about degrees with the first year free of fees at the Donegal ETB before you go to the ATU campus or an ATU campus. The podcast is available from today, and that show is broadcast on air after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. Now we're joined on the programme by Emma Gover, also known as the Wee Donegal Mammy. Good morning to you, Emma. How are you keeping today?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners across the Northwest.
Listen, thanks so much for joining us. Now, you had a recent visit to Letterkenny University Hospital's emergency department. Emma, talk us through it as much as you are comfortable in doing so.
Yes, I was in Letterkenny University Hospital yesterday. With my son. Mm. And I just, first of all, I always say this, and it's important that I say this is not a reflection on the staff. But it was absolute carnage up there, and that's the truth. We went in at about 11:30. We got triaged around 12:30, because we stood in the queue for about 30 minutes. There's quite a queue, and the girls in the front desk were busy. So then we got triaged about 12:30. And then nothing to about. I went in and I said, listen, do you know how long we're going to be waiting? Because we have concerns around the fact that there's been no eating or drinking been happening in the last 2 days. There's clearly quite a big abscess. GPs turned, for markers for sepsis and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was told, listen, we're really sorry. There's a massive queue in front of him. All our cubicles are full, which I could see with my own two eyes. Resources full. There were chair parked one after the other, after the other along the wall. So I said, okay. I went back out, sat down because I thought that there's nothing they can, there literally is no space. Mm-hmm. I went back in, and as I went back in, there was maintenance men there constructing another cubicle, literally constructing another cubicle with some plasterboard, wood, and a curtain roll, or a curtain pole in the curtain. And I thought to myself, this is the health service in 2024. They're actually they found a spare space of wall, a wee alcove.
Mm-hmm.
And they're constructing a cubicle in there as people are lined up. I mean, there was people sitting on the floor like Indians. And so I went up and I said, listen, I appreciate that you are really busy, but given the fact that he very obviously has an infection, you know, there's a huge abscess there, and, you know, not eating, not drinking, nauseated, all of these things that were concerning to the GP and to myself, because there is an underlying condition there. He's had no bloods done to check for infection markers or anything like that.
And I mean, this is also in the context of the massive spend from the HSC warning people to advocate for themselves as it relates to sepsis.
In relation to sepsis, yeah. So I said, listen, I'm really concerned. And, you know, given the fact that he has a pre-existing medical condition, you know, there is concern that he would be more vulnerable because his immune system's taking a battering. And she said, look, I'm really sorry. And I said, right, but what do I do? I said, you know, he said, no fluids up. It's now 20 past five at this stage. I said, this child hasn't been able to eat or drink for days.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no fluids up. He said, no blood pressure taken. Since he came in and seen the triage nurse, he's had no bloods taken. He hasn't even had a temperature check. And she said, I know, but we're really snowed under.
Mm.
And she said, I am really sorry. And I said, look, I'm not being smart or funny. I said, listen, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I said, but I need to take him to another hospital. And she said, I can't tell you to do that. But that is your right to do that.
Mm.
And I said, you're right. She said, but if you make that decision, can you just let us know? So I said, right, okay. So this lady, then she obviously, I don't know whether she recognised me or she just heard me or what the story was, because you know I do a lot of advocacy for the hospital and about the health service. And she approached me and she said, do you see that man there? He's actually leaving now. He's discharging himself. And I was like, okay. She said, he's here since 4 o'clock yesterday. He's been sitting in that chair since 4 o'clock yesterday. And it's now 20 past five today.
So that's 20, that's 25 hours.
Yeah. And he'd been sitting in that one chair. So I said, oh my God. And she said, he's discharging himself now without following through because he can't, you know, he's sitting in that chair since 4 o'clock yesterday. So 25 and a half hours that man sat in that chair. The man sitting beside my son was a 97-year-old man who had been sitting in the chair from 1 o'clock. And when he left last night to go and get an x-ray, I think it must have been 11:30, 11:45, a 97-year-old man sitting in the chair. And he hadn't had his bloods done to 11:30 last night. There was another family who were discharging their loved one who were going to literally leave and go to Alton the Alvin. And I said, right, okay. Then there was, I mean, probably one of the most heartbreaking things was a young fellow with anorexia, unable to eat for 2 days as well. Clearly very unwell and clearly mentally vulnerable.
Mm.
And his mother stood there and said, my son's going to die if he doesn't get help.
Mm.
And, you know, we've been sent here to get help. And they said, there's nothing we can do. And likewise, she said, I need to drive to the children's hospital. What do I need to do? And they said, it's up to you. So that family last night, you know, not only were they in a precarious place physically, but they also were mentally.
Mm.
That was a child who was clearly very clinically underweight. Very clinically underweight. You knew to look at him. And his team had been on the phone. And I'm telling you that the team, the child and family mental health service were saying that they couldn't influence or intervene in any way. They just had to navigate their way through the system. But they were giving this mother pointers on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
what to try and say to highlight her son's case, because they were telling her he has no more weight left to lose, he could drop dead.
So that he would be elevated on the list. But the problem he's competing with the 97-year-old person to sort of get seen first. That's the not actively competing, but that's the reality of it. So she said,
you know, I'm not looking for my child to be bumped up the list. Can you not just give him find some way to give him nutrition while he's waiting?
Yeah, well, I would forgive her for saying that she wanted the young fella bumped up the list. So you would have been sitting in the main ED part, would you?
Yes, and I was sitting in the main ED part.
Was there any spare seating?
You know, in the front, there would have been maybe 5 or 6 spare seats every now and then, and you would have actually thought, because I've seen it worse out the front.
Yeah.
So you would have thought, do you know what, actually, maybe. But when you went in the other door, it was just like, and you know, there were doctors standing there taking medical histories, taking bloods, with these people sitting in chairs. No thought, and when I say no thought for dignity, I don't mean the doctors, they had no choice. But what I'm saying is, these people are not being afforded dignity, privacy.
I mean, it's
awful. My own son, I asked for painkillers for my son last night at 7 o'clock, and they were so rushed off their feet that they managed to do a changeover of staff. And I went back in twice and said, listen, we're waiting on these painkillers. He's in agony out there. And they said, listen, we are coming out. At 11 o'clock last night, I was like, please, he's in agony. And then they said, okay, we're putting up an IV now.
Obviously, you know, we're talking about patients' experience and what have you, and you've talked about it there. What a working environment for these people to go in and start, I don't know if it's 8 or 12-hour shifts, but to know that you're going in there, whatever time the shift turnover is at, you wonder how they go in, wouldn't you, sometimes? I mean, it's amazing, it's astonishing what they do under the circumstances.
I spoke with a nurse last night who was actually working with my son, and she was lovely. She's very, very nice, the girl. She said to me, I said, dear, listen, I've been raising this issue constantly. She says, I know you have. I said, I'm going to be talking at that stage, I knew I'd be talking today. I said, I'm going to be talking to Greg Hughes tomorrow about it. She said, you please do. And I said, oh, she said, I'm actually saying to him, please keep shouting out loud, keep shouting, don't drop this. Please. She says, we need the patient stories out there. We do. And the thing is, this is just, I mean, the stories yesterday, I mean, of a wee fella last week as well, you know, 13 years of age, waited 18 hours to be seen by the doctor to be told, actually, you know, you need to be in Galway. To then get transferred to Galway. Another lady yesterday was actually in a different hospital down the country for an appointment, was told she needed to go to A&E, had to travel back from that hospital to go see her own GP in Donegal to go back to Letterkenny Hospital.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's
we have to be having this.
This
we have to be having this conversation too, in the context of, you know, local and European elections that are taking place on June 7th. I mean, I've made the point more times than it. You know, when you do this, when you're doing the show every day, Emma, you're at pains not to repeat yourself, because you know you're conscious that people are having to listen to the same stuff all the time. But I just really don't feel that the council as a whole has really made enough noise about this. I'm just going to be completely honest with you.
Well, you see, this is the thing, and I would actually agree with you there, Greg, in the sense that somebody said to me yesterday, but you see, it's not the local councillor's job. They have no remit in the health service. And that's actually, it depends on the way that you look at it, right? So, for example, there is a health panel. 5 people go on that panel from the local council and travel to Galway. We know that. They go on the health board panel. I think Jerry is one of them, might be on it at the moment, or he has been on it in the past.
Yeah, there's a few of them, yeah.
And not just that, as I said to the MEPs as well, listen, if you sign yourself up to a party, or you sign yourself up to a collective of independents, it doesn't matter whether you're going to Europe or you're staying local, you have the ability then to put pressure on your colleagues to raise this issue. You have the platform that the ordinary Joe Soap in the street like me doesn't have. You have the numbers of the people who are higher up, who are in the Dáil, who have contacts. You have their numbers. to put pressure on them to start hiring, because we're one of the biggest Model 3 hospitals, and we're the least funded. That's not just my opinion, that's fact. The fact that we're the least funded. You know what I mean?
There are other things. I mean, other than making representations, there are other things you can do to make noise about these things as well. But
absolutely. I called them all out last night and said, "Land down. Come and actually see for yourself." And I was saying what I said last night, and I have no hesitation in saying it. I'm calling on Minister Donnelly to come and make a visit to Letterkenny University Hospital, not a scheduled visit. Okay, because it is a proven statistical fact that planned visits do not show you the real picture. They don't. I'm calling on him just to land like the rest of us have to do.
But it's hard to get him to do a scheduled visit, let alone...
You see what is actually going on.
There was a TD and God help her, she got an awful bit of abuse for it, but... Early last year, or maybe it was the year before, she had to land in hospital with her daughter or son. She put up this sort of, the poor staff and patients, things are very bad in the ED. And it wasn't actually as bad as, you know, anywhere near as bad as what we'd experienced up here or whatever. And it was sort of, she got an awful lot of abuse for it because it was the first time really anyone who's a decision maker sort of says, oh, things are bad here. Because there's often a detachment between what the world they live in and the world the rest of us live in, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And it was almost she was commenting about it, the reason she got the abuse is it was framed as if she never realised it was like this, if you know what I mean. All we do is talk about it and live that experience. And one TD, it was almost like, oh, so the hospitals are in bad shape. And as I say, I don't agree with any abuse towards anyone personally.
No.
But she had to delete the tweet in the end because it was like, you know, now you understand what we're talking about here.
Well, this is a double-edged sword because, as you say, for that TD, so if we have a TD who is sitting in government and let's say they do put out a tweet like that, they are worried that they may face that abuse. And then we have TDs in opposition who are constantly raising the issue but are now becoming maybe reluctant because they're being told you're only saying that because you're in opposition and you want to use that as a political football.
Well, look, the way the world works, right, unfortunately, is the hospital crisis is ongoing. It's a nightmare, right? We're coming up to an election. This election is going to be fought to a great extent about immigration. That is the truth, right? Now, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to get into that conversation. But now what you have is you've got Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Greens now in government, hardening their line, cutting payments, doing this, that, and taking action, real action at the moment. And then you've got the opposition parties adjusting their position, saying they're going to get tough on this, that, and done. And we, the public, kind of to some extent are suckers to this because, yes, it's incredibly important issue, don't get me wrong, but that's all the stuff that's happening in the run-up to the election. The EU Migration Pact was sitting there for 10 years and it was banged through Europe as we headed into this election.
Exactly.
So we're gonna end up voting probably on a easy-to-understand divisive issue about immigration.
Yes.
And not about our everyday life experience of the hospital and not backing that 97-year-old gentleman who was sitting for 6 hours on a hard bench. Not you with your son there. Not the young child suffering from anorexia that had to leave. Not the other gentleman that had to sign himself out. And probably all of those will end up getting called in about 8 hours. You know, it was Greg Hughes here, Greg Hughes. And I've probably left 8 hours ago. So we're kind of... We, the public, are kind of in some way, I think, we have to take a bit of responsibility in this ourselves.
We're not
going to be voting on that hospital, if the truth be told. We're going to be voting on something
exactly
really
right.
emotive and in our face.
Well, this is why I'm trying to raise this issue as well. Now, listen, I'm not going to get into the immigration discussion either. I do believe that we need to totally revamp the system.
Of course, and that's fit for
that.
We'll have that conversation another time, but my point is that's what we're going to be, that's what an awful lot of people are voting on.
But my point would be that I called a public meeting like this in 2019 when the general election was on. If anybody remembers, I was actually on your show. And I called a public meeting about it then because children didn't have a palliative care specialist in Ireland because the only one palliative care consultant we had left because he couldn't deal with being the only pain specialist for children in Ireland. And he went to Australia. He couldn't deal with it. He had burnout. He couldn't deal with the stress of it anymore. So this isn't something that's happened in the last 12 months or 24 months or since the war in Ukraine broke out or anything else. This is something that has been happening systemically over years. Over years, or her health service has been allowed to crumble. Now, I know I'm going to get the spiel from the powers that be saying, oh, well, you know, we're building the step-down bed centre across the road from Letterkenny. That's not going to happen overnight. They're building it, yeah. But we also need to be careful that that doesn't become long stay, if you understand me meaning.
Yeah. Okay, that I get you.
That's not where people go to when they can't get the primary care packages for home, like carers and home help. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that that stays as a step-down service to free up it. But having said that, that didn't help that 97-year-old man last night. It didn't help my son. It didn't help the wee fellow who waited 18 hours for getting transferred away. It didn't help the mother who told me, who reached out to me online and said she went in with her son who had a serious head injury. A serious head injury where you're supposed to be assessed within 10 minutes when there's an obvious severe head injury. It was 6 hours before he got to see a doctor and he had a bleed in his brain.
Well, listen, I mean, Emma, unfortunately, I'm going to have to move on because it's an important issue, but I do have a few other things to fit in before 10. But look, I get these stories all of the time and I could do a story every single day. People who need certain medications but are deemed not to be sick enough to get that medication, so they go somewhere else to get it. Some horrific stories. But Emma, listen, thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Take care, Emma. All right, bye-bye. Take care. My late father-in-law went in by ambulance in January about 11:30 a.m. and was left in the waiting room. No bloods or anything done. I asked three different times for pain relief, and in the end up, he asked me to get his grandkids outside town to bring something, which he did, or they did. He eventually collapsed, and there was a big rush to resus and then ICU with sepsis. I did feel like taking him home. I was so mad. Even when he collapsed, only for his granddaughter speaking up, they didn't really take us seriously. I was in A&E with my child last week. I was in a queue for 40 minutes to get checked in. Firstly, there wasn't enough seats for us all that was presenting. When we got through for x-ray and to see a doctor, there was hardly room to walk through the corridors. I overheard a member of staff speaking with a member of the public and told them that there was a huge health and safety issue during the week as they couldn't get a trolley bed without through with the amount of people waiting and standing in the halls to go to x-ray. If an emergency was to happen, this hospital would be completely liable for a huge disaster. The staff cannot do enough for you, and how they work in these conditions baffles me. They are truly angels, but government needs to release funding and adequately staff this hospital and open more beds. And what we did see, though, is that, and I take your point, is there are emergency plans in place, and there are resources that can be drawn in, and all staff, even those off duty, come in. And we did see that in the immediate aftermath of the awful Chrysler tragedy. So there are measures in place, and those measures do work. But I do take your broader point. Okay, we're welcome onto the programme now, Senator Niall Blaney, a candidate in the upcoming European elections for the Midlands Northwest constituency. Good morning to you, Niall. Thanks for taking the call today.
Good morning, Grace.
Right, so before we talk about the exchange between you and your party leader at the recent launch of the Fianna Fáil European election, what was going on beforehand, or what has been happening over the course of your campaign that has made you feel let down by the party? I don't want to misphrase it, but what supports have you felt were lacking or are lacking?
Well, I think I dealt with that fairly exclusively last week, Greg. I spelt out the coverage that I wasn't getting nationally. And what I don't want this to be is about myself and Micheál Martin. I suppose I sometimes you have to maybe fight to be heard. And I'm fighting to have the needs of the regions heard, and I think that's more important. And I want to fight to ensure those needs are met. And rather than us being about myself and Micheál Martin, it needs to be about the region, what we're missing here, the representation we're missing.
Yeah, but we can't look past something I've never really seen before, Niall. And that was you at the press conference speaking as you did about the lack of support you feel you were getting. Was that a spur of the moment thing, or had you planned to do that?
I suppose I'd call out my situation at that stage, Greg, I haven't had any TV appearances. So I dealt with that last week. I called it out for what it was. And there's a poster campaign going on that I'm not party to. I called that out as well. I call out the unfair play. And I suppose the difference in my party and that I get to do that and still be in the party, not like others. I called out the unfair play, and that is done now. But as I said, I will fight to be heard. And I fought last week to be heard. And if I get the opportunity to be the MP, MEP in Europe, I will fight to have our needs heard.
I get you. And I do understand that also you want to use this opportunity to talk about what you deliver. And I've no problem with that whatsoever. But I'm just again curious about this press conference. What was said afterwards? Can you divulge what was said to you afterwards by either the other candidates who looked pretty shocked or Micheál Martin himself?
Well, we had an exchange of our positions, let's say that myself and the leader, but we've moved on. I'm moving on with my campaign.
There is a bit of a history, though, in terms of, it seems, you know, Fianna Fáil MEP candidates, you know, not getting a fair rub with the party, either all of a sudden a candidate being dropped in the Sligo area or, for instance, you know, like... The point is like you as a seasoned politician and as a senator and as a loyal member of Fianna Fáil, like to put your name forward and to campaign, you know, you're putting to some extent too, you're putting your legacy out on the line, you're putting your reputation out there. You know, whether people like you or not, that is something that you've done, and it just seems another case of the. You know, the party throwing that back into your face a little bit. As I say, I'm not trying to whip up anything here, right? But, you know, I'm speaking as a fellow Donegal person here. Like, how much more are certain Fianna Fáil candidates going to have to take before they say enough is enough? Like, I mean, are you in any way sort of... Is your patience running thin with the party at this point?
Well, as you've seen last week, my patience ran thin. I did put everything into this campaign for well over a year now. And that of my team as well. We've invested an awful lot time, energy, and money, resources to this campaign. And my quip was that every candidate deserves the same supports. This thing of meddling in elections or choosing one candidate over another is not the thing to do. I've called that out, Greg, very clearly last week. And this is not about myself and Micheál Martin or Fianna Fáil. It's about the region I represent. And I'm
what it feels to me, and we'll get to that, but what it feels to me is that it feels to me that you have been shafted to some extent in that maybe never wanted you on the ticket. Because you, when they went through the selection convention, maybe the party thought, well, there's no chance Niall's going to get selected, but you did really well. And they opted to pick two from three and then decided to run three. You know, so it seems like you exceeded their expectations, and then they thought, well, how do we fix this problem? Well, we're going to run the two we thought we were going to run in the first place in any case. That's what it looks like from an outsider looking into me. Why have a selection convention if you're going to put all three of the candidates up? They didn't expect you to do so well amongst your fellow party members.
Well, the history of this is there for everybody to see, Greg. I'm not going to get into it at this stage because we're too close to the election. We need to get into the issues because it's not about me and Fianna Fáil. This is about our place here in the Northwest, where we are in the Northwest, but moreover, the opportunities we have and a proper advocate in the EU representing us and our deficits and someone that actually knows those deficits. I'm not going to get into an argument with you here this morning.
No, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm back. Hey, come here.
I think they're clear for anybody.
I'm backing you here to some extent. I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah. No, I get that. I appreciate that, Greg. But I'm not going to get into...
So you're not going to leave Fianna Fáil on the radio then? Is that the truth?
Pardon?
You're not going to leave Fianna Fáil on the radio then? Is that? There's no point in me barking up that tree.
I have no intention of leaving. Okay. No, there's too much roots with
I know, I'm being facetious.
Party, Greg, I'm not...
I'll give you I'm being facetious, of course. Now, I'm giving. I know you wanted to talk about why you believe that you should be selected as an MEP. So, to be fair to you, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that. You believe that that we would be far advantaged. We'd be greatly advantaged by having a Northwest-based MEP, a Donegal-based MEP.
Yeah, I suppose. There's a good opportunity for an MEP from this region since we got Objective One status. And the committees and institutions of the European Parliament, the democratic institutions of the European Parliament, are a really important part of how the EU works. And anybody over there representing us that doesn't use those institutions are letting us down. And it's very clear that we have been let down with MEPs that haven't been showing up for committees, MEPs that are sending their assistants who can't contribute to committees. Our voice has not been heard on infrastructure. It hasn't been heard on farming, fishing, even on MICA. We have not been represented, and that has to change, Greg. And this isn't just about the current generations, about the next. If we don't build our infrastructure and use the opportunities at Europe, with the Objective One status, we are not going to get the same opportunities as the east of the country and the south. And if we don't get advocates that are prepared to stand up and stand their ground at the EU level, our problem at the moment, nobody's advocating. There's an odd word said here and there in a speech, but nobody's been properly advocating. Nobody is making proper use of the institutions, the committees in the EU. And it's not good enough.
Yeah. I know what the candidates, if they're here, would say otherwise, but some would say, you know, you represented, you know, you made reference there to defective concrete. You didn't attend the People's Document event. I think you were canvassing maybe down the country. It's a big, but some people might hear you say that and go, well, that was where you could have really got the information. Now, I know you're affected by this yourself and your brother is as well, but that would have been an opportunity for you to sort of look the people affected by this in the whites of their eyes and be able to sort of take that document with you to Europe. You know, that would have been very advantageous to your campaign.
Yeah, well, I support that document, Greg, first and foremost. Secondly, I wasn't around that night, and I wish I could have been around that night. But I have been meeting the MICA Action Group members at every public meeting we have had right across Donegal for the last number of weeks and months. I meet MICA homeowners day in, day out. They talk to me as well, believe it or not. But at the end of the day, if we were not involved in delivering the scheme that's currently there, there wouldn't be a scheme. The scheme that's there is there because myself and Charlie McConlogue rolled up our sleeves over the last 4 years and done our damnedest to get it as far as it is. It's not perfect. There are many of those with larger houses will not get 100%, but there are many that are and will get 100% funding, and I don't intend to have an argument about that this morning. But for those to come along at EU level and say the report that they put together can do something for MICA, they're not telling the truth, because the report they put together is a mechanism in Europe where you can get up to 20 grand to put a report together by your own assistants in your office, based on whatever information is out there. The report that was put together is nothing more, nothing less. It has not been put on the floor of Parliament. So those that say they've brought it to Europe haven't actually brought it to Europe. They've just put a report together that's been paid for by Europe.
Well, listen, that's
unfair as well.
And other people will see it as differently, and the public can make their mind up on that. All right, Senator Noel Blaney, thanks for your time this morning. Take care. He's a candidate in the upcoming European elections for Midlands Northwest constituency. And as that story was running, because we've been preoccupied with other stuff, elections, etc., we got quite a lot of people backing Senator Blaney in him calling out the Taoiseach as he did. Right, now, gnarly towards the end of the final hour of the show. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we have our third from last local election debate. And by the way, just to let you know, that we have you covered for the actual election itself over Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday, all boxes are being brought to the Oral Leisure Centre to be sorted through. We'll be broadcasting live from there. We'll have a panel, and any indications that we get and any of the situations that are ongoing, of course, locals and European, then the boxes then are sent out to their local electorate areas. We have a team in Glenties, in Inishowen, of course, in the Finn Valley, Donegal Town, and in the Aura. And we'll have a brilliant visual experience for you as well. Obviously, the majority of you listening on radio, that's our priority, and we've got you covered there as well. But if you're at home and you want to bang it on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, or watch on your mobile or your laptop or whatever it is, we're going to be broadcasting live, particularly through Sunday, and you'll be able to watch everything that's happening as well. To that end, as we head towards the election, we continue to speak to candidates. We're in Glenties today, in the Glenties district area, the Glenties electoral area. We've got six seats, 16 candidates, and we've got one, two, three, four, five, six of those in studio with us after 10. Any questions pertaining to the Glenties electoral area, get them into us now, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 07491 25,000. Loads of you texting as it relates to the hospital as well, by the way. We'll return to that subject tomorrow morning. Right, OK. We'll be back after 10 with another local election debate.